doohickeys in front of you, please press it so it's to the green light. One time. Awesome. Thank you. Welcome to our first meeting in the new offices. We're going to give Andrew a minute to welcome everyone in it before we do introductions. But I'm Abby. I'm the chair for the WFEDD this year, and I'm with the Sully Chamber. Welcome us, Andrew. Please.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I know most of you, but not all of you. I'm Andrew Gruber. I'm the executive director here at Wasatch Front Regional Council. For those of you that have been working with us for a long time, and also to those of you that are just joining up with a Wasatch Front committee, I am just really thrilled to welcome you here to our meeting and to our new office. As Abby said, we just moved into these offices last week after being out west of the airport. Great space west of the airport, but it's a little hard to practice what we preach of a mix of uses in our community and multitude of transportation choices when you're west of the airport. So here, more on the heart of things, and we're really happy to have you here. We are actually having a full open house celebration this Thursday of this week. We're having our first full council meeting, the Wasatch Front Regional Council, on Thursday at 2 p.m. And then some of you have these little cards in front of you. We're having a open house as well as a celebration of our 50th anniversary as an organization serving our region. So you're welcome to come back for that if you want, or share that with your friends and family, who I'm sure would just love to come to our offices. Just a little housekeeping. The restrooms are just right out behind the reception desk over there. Help yourself to beverages here. And then also, if you want coffee or tea or something, you can go right back through the kitchen here. And then right after the meeting, if anybody is interested in just doing a loop walk of the office, you're more than welcome to. And happy to have you here. So thank you.
Thanks, Abby.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it. So let's start, Mario. Why don't we start with you and just who you are, who you're representing, and then which county you're actually representing as well.
Okay. Muriel Sochmel, representing Deseret UAS. UAS stands for Unmanned Aerial Systems. It's a joint collaborative partnership between Tooele and Box Elder counties to facilitate rural economic development through the advancement of the unmanned aerial systems industry.
Sounds like you've rehearsed that. That's
I know.
Fantastic.
And Tooele County.
Yes, so Tooele County.
Great, perfect.
Sean Milne, Tooele County Commission. Commissioner. Representing Tooele County.
Awesome.
Ty Bailey, Morgan City. Representing Morgan County.
Andrew Barfield, Showbase Resort. We travel with Morgan and Beaver County.
Alan Packard, with Jordan Valley Water and Sewer District, and that's Mineral Salt Lake County, full time region, Utah County.
I'm Chris Williams, I'm with Davis School District.
Hi, it's Ed Moulton, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
I'm Debbie Min, representing Tooele City. I serve as their mayor.
Chris Long, Republican State, Tooele County.
Mary Pratt, Administrative Assistant, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Katie Gerard, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Carrie Fullerton, Baker County.
Katie Witt, Mayor of Kaysville, representing Davis County.
Linda Kelly, Layton Hills Mall, Layton, Utah, and Davis County.
Guy Latender, Weber State University.
Bob Stevenson, Davis County.
I'm Scott Hess with Wasatch Front Regional Council and the director of the Wasatch Front Economic Development District.
Wonderful. Well, thanks everyone for going around and introducing yourselves. This is actually, yeah. Okay, let's start right here.
I'm Ben Director of Science and Finance.
I'm Lauren Victor,
we are going to let you introduce yourself because you're the last two that have come in, so please.
Mike Newton, Morgan County.
Great. And ma'am? Andrea?
Oh, I'm Andrea, sorry. We're here.
Awesome. Well, thanks everyone for coming. This is really our first official one of the new committees that we assigned last time that we met as the board. Scott, will you just go through and explain for our group the different color name badges and what they kind of distinguish, just so we're aware of what's going on?
Yes, so the Wasatch Front Economic Development District is made up of two memberships within the committee. So the first is the board itself. That's membership appointed by two members appointed by the Council of Governments from each of the five counties, as well as two state at-large folks. And on our group, that's Benjamin Hart with the Governor's Office of Economic Development and Carrie Main with Utah Department of Workforce Services. And then the tan or the yellow colored name tags are our strategy committee members. And that's a 13-member board made up of representatives from each of the counties and some at-large members that are primarily from the private sector or education from throughout the region. So there's a mix of both. The only time that the board meets separate from the strategy committee is for staffing or other private matters, budget, that sort of things. Otherwise, all of our committees will include both the board as well as the strategy committee.
Wonderful, thank you. At this time, we're on item number two, opportunity for public comment if there's anyone that from the public that would wish to speak. And just so everyone's aware that are new, this is an open meeting, so everything is being recorded. If there's anyone from the public? Okay, seeing none, let's move on. Scott?
Hey, Abby, I just want to acknowledge one thing, that there are still some other members of this, of the board and the strategy committee that are in formation, particularly some folks from Salt Lake County, additional folks from Salt Lake County going to be added. We feel like, you know, there's a lot of people from Tooele, and so we have to make sure that Salt Lake County doesn't get forgotten, okay?
Salt Lake County.
So more people to come as the meetings go by.
Proud of me, I was going to say something.
It's those buttons, snap buttons. Scott, will you take us to item number three?
I will. So this is the meat of this meeting, the reason that we're here, and we're actually meeting today in a work session of the board and the strategy committee. This is off of our standard meeting schedule, which is quarterly, so our next actual meeting of the board would be in May. So what we're going to be going over today is this 11 by 17 sheet, and this is, in effect, a one-pager of the 2018 through 2023 Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, which, as an economic development district, we are charged to create every 5 years and then update annually. So,
And
submit to the Economic Development Administration. Our office, a regional office, is in Denver. So we've been in discussion internally with the chair, a number of folks on the board, your county folks, and then actually have sent a draft of this a few weeks ago to the Economic Development Administration to begin the review of this. So the information located on this, or information in this page, is going to be written into a full report, so there's more text to support the actual said strategy itself, and then submitted to the Economic Development Administration at the end of May. So we're on a fairly tight time frame, but we have the meat of it has been fleshed out here. This is in draft form. It's in no way finalized, and we really want to utilize your time today to get information and feedback. So just to orient you to this and what we're going to be talking about, we have four strategies for regional economic development, and then within the strategies you have objectives, actions, and performance evaluation criteria. So that's the pieces that are required by the EDA in development of a SEDS. And I think that the most effective thing to do here, so that I don't talk to you and you guys talk to us, is that we're going to take about 15 minutes per strategy, and I'll just intro it, open it up. 15 minutes, and as a group, think about how do we accomplish these things, and what are the most effective or the highest priorities on this objectives list. So it doesn't have to be an entire laundry list of every single regional economic development effort that's happening, but I do want to see yourself, your organization, and your work represented here so that you have a piece of this And we'll just chat through strategy, objectives, and if we get into the collaborative actions, then I think that, you know, that's about as far as we'll be able to get into any one. And then we'll roll down through all four of them. And then at the end of the meeting, I'll discuss next steps.
Perfect.
Okay.
Before we move on, I just want to draw your attention to this page. So this, we are, of the four annual objectives, we are working on number one today.
Yep. So there's, yep, and for those who are new to the committee itself, we have the first meeting of the year in January. The Wasatch Front Economic Development District, as an organization, as a group, adopted these four goals. So one is to complete, adopt, and report on the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, called the SEDS. Two is promotion of Wasatch Choice 2050 as a collaborative economic development strategy. That's what we've been working together with our partners, 5.5 counties, 63 jurisdictions, on a long-range transportation economic development land use plan. And three is integrate state, regional, and local transportation decisions with economic development efforts. And four is to be a body that informs state, regional, and local stakeholders on economic development efforts. So a standard meeting, the one in May, you'll have a presentation on some regional economic development effort that's of interest to you all. Okay, so to begin, strategy number one that we see in the region, link development with transportation and other infrastructure. And the long description of this would be to coordinate transportation investments and land use decisions to enhance households' access to jobs and educational opportunities, and employers' access to workforce and customers. And you might notice the way, if you did notice the way these strategies are outlined, the top three are ones that us as an organization, as an EDD, and both as WFRC, really have the levers to pull. And then the bottom one is really collaboration and partnerships with other state and local partners. So I don't know if you want me to go through the objectives themselves and just read them, or if we want to just open up a discussion on how do we accomplish this? As an organization, how are we going to work to link development with transportation and other infrastructure?
Do we want to take a minute and just read the four objectives there, and then we'll come back about a minute and a half?
Can you turn that?
Ideas. A lot of you aren't in the weeds of this particular topic, so let's just start with someone that has a thought on this particular objective. Strategy, excuse me. You think it's great, Sean?
And if anybody read further into the collaborative actions, we've tried to begin each of the collaborative actions with a person, so an actor, and what that person would do. So this isn't meant to be a list of what we think you should do. In some ways, it's what we might think your organization is already doing. And if that's a hole or if that's incorrect, then please let us know so that we can identify it. But the actions and the performance are what we will report on annually within each of these objectives. So we'll have a strategy and objective, and then we'll actually report on each one of these items. So it's important that we get them right, that they're actually things that are happening and moving. But we just, you know, we don't necessarily need to add more and more to this, but we do want to know if we've got the objectives in
the right
Scott,
spot.
Abby,
yes.
remind me again on SB 34. Is that the Hartford bill on infrastructure?
No, that was the housing bill. SB 34 is the housing.
That's the housing bill. Okay.
Yeah.
SB 34 is the bill that Senator Anderegg sponsored that would require each of the local governments, cities, and counties around the state to develop moderate income housing plans. So look at housing, and then also look at in their general plans, not just the housing, but transportation and land use, and integrate them together at a local level, just as here at a regional level, we're integrating transportation, land use, economic development, and housing together.
Was there funding source tied to that?
It was stripped out at the end of session, so there's no new money in Senate Bill 34 for housing, but that doesn't mean that a lot can't be accomplished.
However,
yes,
don't accomplish some of the goals laid out, do get potentially penalized with withheld from TIF funds.
Yeah, there's a little penalty on the backside, but there's no upfront.
Very few that will, if ever, will ever see that, but it's...
Right, I get it.
There's a stick, I guess, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Thank you.
Yeah. And Commissioner, you didn't introduce yourself, I think, when you came in. So would you, our Vice Chair, would you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Commissioner Gage Ferrara, Weber County. Sorry I'm late. Happy to be with you. And
Mayor Wilson.
Work of this.
Oh, I'm fine. Okay.
How are you?
Yes, please introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking. Happy to be here. Mayor Wilson, Salt Lake County.
And Michael.
Michael Harper,
Joe
Spence.
Yes. And Joe. Wonderful. Anyone else we missed? Okay. Okay, so the strategy, link development and transportation and other infrastructure, does the long version suffice? Anyone have any objective to it? Objection. Ted, you have a thought on the tip of your tongue.
I think we lead with this one as an organization, as we were talking about it, we thought, well, there's a value to put this down and be explicit about it, because I think it's one of the things that the UD is particularly situated to do, which is to work with local governments within the context of Wasatch Choice 2050, think geographically about where does economic development, where are the priority locations? How does it dovetail with effective local planning? Where does the infrastructure improvement happen? And to really be explicit about that geographic alignment of those considerations. And so, forgive me if you were just focusing on the first objective and I flew past that, but I wanted to provide perhaps a little bit of context relative to this strategy. And then it breaks out, and I would say the first item is focused perhaps more so on the land development and economic development piece. The third item is focused more on the location of the infrastructure itself. The second item, the vulnerable communities, is in a sense a subset of the first line item. And then as you get down to the other one, it's importantly noting that this is not just a conversation about transportation infrastructure. And there may very well be some things that are need to be highlighted, perhaps, that we want to hear about relative to those, but that was sort of part of the thinking and the organization of those objectives.
So Ted, does this allow the communities to have a lot of flexibility with what they want to do, or is this forcing?
It is not at all about forcing, but it is asking us all to be strategic, and that might mean, hey, let's acknowledge that we know where the freeways are or will be. We know where the rail lines are or will be. If we take advantage of the sites that are created by those synergies, then we have an opportunity to really enhance low-hanging fruit. And so that is what it is. But the other side of it is local governments know what you want. You know what your vision is for growth and development. Let's all understand that as we develop regional infrastructure as well. So it's not forcing anybody to do anything other than what, you know, sort of the collaboration of planning in other spheres suggests, hey, this might make more sense than that.
Okay, so what I'm going to ask you right now, I'm not going to tell you, I totally understand, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure I understood what I just said.
That's why I just nod. The question I'd have is, you know, right now UTA is trying to make decision on picking three top spots dealing with their TODs, correct? So explain to me, or I guess the group, that as we want to try to work this stuff and we want to try to work around the rail and these connections and all this type of stuff, why everything's still so limited with what's allowed.
I can give you what I consider to be a straightforward answer to that question. So right now in law, there's only a UTA, in working with property that they own, has a certain number of TOD, transit-oriented development projects, that they are allowed to engage in, right? And you're acknowledging that, and like what Ted was saying, by coordinating transportation with residential development, with economic development, job creation, where are jobs, where are homes, coordinated with transportation, it's an effective way to promote economic development. Well, why is there a limit? And the answer to that, candidly, is that there has been some degree historically, I think, of skepticism of only giving UTA so much flexibility in what they do. So if we think collectively that there needs to be more transit-oriented development, and that is an effective strategy to absorbing growth, then that may be something that this group says, hey, we need to move in that direction as we go forward to allow UTA to participate more fully with the communities on moving forward with TOD.
And I'm only being the devil's advocate on this, but if we have these locations, which realistically is what we want to be able to do a lot of economic development around, mm-hmm. and we have hypothetically 12 of them that exist across the state, and there's only three that they're going to turn around or across the Wasatch Front, and three, what type of message does that send to these other communities when they're trying to figure out what they want to do based upon all the stuff Ted just said there that mm-hmm. nobody understood?
Mm-hmm.
No offense, Ted. Yeah, great point.
I'm sorry, just on that point, so it feels like one of the things you're saying, you tell me if you're not saying this, we should be looking for not just ways to encourage TOD that in a way that works economically, but also looking for barriers to TOD, and the number of allowable sites that UTA can do for TOD may be a barrier that we should work on. That would be a legislative effort.
Yes, I agree. I think the main thing is that, you know, we can talk in Kaysville City, if I'll point to her. Kaysville City realistically needs to be dependent upon Layton and Syracuse and Farmington to be able to tie things together. Those cities need to be able to tie around everybody else, which basically then encompasses all of Davis County. Davis County and Weber County are working closely to try to tie economic things together with them. And when you look at it, it ends up being all of us are trying to tie this whole thing together throughout the state. But to be able to do it, I think we all have to be on the same playing field so that as we go talk to the local leaders and the people around, that everybody is going, hey, it's fair for everyone, not you guys, okay, you can do it, the rest of you guys got to wait till we decide if you can do it or not. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So.
I totally agree with you, Commissioner. Abby, I had a quick question and then a comment. So with strategy number one, is it just to focus on transportation and other infrastructure or on investments? Because right underneath the title, we say coordinate transportation investments and land use decisions. And I would recommend that we keep that a bit more broad to encapsulate other types of investments. And my comment on that is to consider micro-mobility. So e-scooters and bike sharing and those types of things that really can get to those vulnerable populations and help to augment access. and mobility as a service. So when we're talking the linkage between economic development and transportation investments, those can be partnerships with ride-sharing companies, other coordinated mobility providers that can, again, augment that access. And it's just a strategic economic development partnership as well.
And it's economic development because you're giving more people access to jobs, mm-hmm. right? By making right. those right. connections.
Yes, yes. And through a model, some of those can be set up through a model of like a 3P. But absolutely, it just augments those access to educational and employment opportunities.
Great. No, that's perfect. Thank you. You had another one circled there. Anything else?
Oh, SB 34, but that was already okay. brought up.
Okay. So. Yes, Mayor.
So I'm still getting up to speed on Opportunity Zone, so generally understand the concept. But one of the things that's important to us at Salt Lake County as outreach tool, how we handle economic development and kind of shift things around a little bit, we've integrated economic development and all of this stuff, transportation, the planning, housing. But one thing that we're exploring right now that I don't see really spelled out here is sort of this thought behind the Opportunity Zone related to lifting certain communities. And I'm not an expert in this, and maybe the people in the room that are, and I hope to become one, but the idea that we're actually supporting small business sectors in certain communities to create wealth and sort of lift a community. And sometimes that means maybe finding avenues to be more creative with our small business or its tools to better educate in that community to help create some opportunity. So, you know, I think what I think about from my point of view, a community with 18 cities now or, and 5 townships, and Kearns is very different from Holiday, you know, it's different from Brighton that will soon be incorporated. So with that, there are areas where we know zip codes are not performing as well as others. I think what I want to do with this committee is come in and say, in addition to everything we know we need to be doing collaboratively and collectively on transportation and planning and all the great stuff WASAC Front has done, what do we need to do for underperforming areas? And which ones and how can we invest? I don't know if that's pilot programs initially or it's a strategy that we develop, but you know, we see some challenges in Utah from the economic development front. It's an area that was built out a long time ago and it's harder now. You know, it speaks to the infill piece that's on this list. How do we create more wealth? I mean, what is it that we can do to move that along? And really hope that in doing so, you know, we get people on a sure footing, their kids, teenagers, adults, and onward. So there's some thinking around that that I don't have any answers for, and perhaps people in the room are more involved and have had these conversations, but I think it's worth at least a point where and how we either create another section or we have an eye for it in each of these areas.
The question would be, how does this line up with all the intergenerational poverty work that's happening? So that's the who,
yes.
right? Those are the people he's talking about.
Yeah.
Some of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is more of the what, like where?
Right.
So where the education
is.
So I don't know. So I can't answer if I'm entrepreneur, but is
right.
there some kind of sync between this?
Yeah.
Right. It's got to stay true to its scope, but
right.
any kind of alignment
yeah.
with intergenerational poverty work that's happening at the various counties?
Yeah, weave it more throughout.
So that would be generally vulnerable communities, and we really I don't think that that's been weaved throughout this entire document in each strategy. So that's a great point. As far as the opportunity zones, when we look at strategy 2 under fiscally sustainable places, we have that. It would be 2 and then objective 4 under financing strategies and incentive policies. A collaborative action of focusing efforts in opportunity zones and centers. So that's the one spot that it's highlighted and noticed. And when you look at a 5-county region, we have a limited number of opportunity zones, but we have many more centers and many more economic centers than even those identified that have been in Wasatch Choice 2050 that are important subregionally or locally. So I don't want to get too heavy one way or the other. I think that what you've brought up as far as intergenerational poverty and vulnerable communities being weaved throughout this document would be really important. And then I did really like the suggestion about small business lending and other opportunities for small business, and that could be part of strategy 4 under encouraging entrepreneurship and innovation, or their stuff, the business expansion and retention. If we can think of a tight goal or a tight action that this group could have that would inform small business lending. I will say one thing that we're going to be looking at as an EDD is consideration of a community development block grant seed money for a revolving loan fund. So we're actually going to explore the idea first, and then that's one thing that potentially EDDs can have revolving loan funds depending on the outcomes of that study and what we would all want to do. But I hope that there's some of those weaved throughout the rest of the document, but they're great points.
Just will you speak into one of those little microphones a little bit more? It's a little hard to hear you. Thanks.
Okay. So I was saying that I'm listening to the conversation now and looking at sort of the micro transportation needs, particularly. I think there are a lot of local companies that can literally fill a lot of this gap. And so if you think clearly around sort of coordination around local technology, local companies that will, one, play ball a lot better with some of the things that we like. Like, you look at some of the other scooter companies, obviously they have lots of problems with them, so on and so forth. And not to pick on those guys, but this is one example. I think there are local companies that could fill that need, and likely others too, and that's worth looking into, and to pair that with some of this additional lending and other types of capital that can be brought together to kind of source locally to solve a lot of these problems, to where we can fit that in.
Perfect. Yeah, so we'll, to Andrew's point here, we'll capture the themes and start to retool this, but we're taking pretty code-based notes here.
Yeah. And another thing that's really a very large opportunity. So, I've been working with the World Trade Center to do an investor meeting in Washington, D.C. The first week of June. Select USA has as a summit sponsored by the Commerce Department. And they bring in international investors from all over the world to look at opportunities to invest in the United States. And so, there's an organization that I consult with called the Atlantic Council. They're very prominent for the economic think tank. Governor Huntsman was the previous chairman before recently taking his role as an ambassador to Russia. So I consult with them around technology and international trade. So one of the things I've gotten them to agree to is to host a private investor session for Utah, particularly, and focus on large-scale projects that are investment-worthy and ready for international investors to look at that are based in Utah. And so we'll be working very actively starting in April with the World Trade Center to flesh out the programming for that. But I think, obviously all the different communities and projects that are going on here also deserve a very prominent place in that programming, so that's something we should think about. So you shouldn't, think, especially given the fact that we have the Opportunity Zones, we have the new TRZ legislation as well that's available, and these are things that we can leverage. So don't necessarily think that the finances are limited. Right? There's ample opportunity to bring in lots of investment FDI into the state via that platform, as well as to grab the appropriate type of tissue that we want from the tech community. So that's something that we're working offline that we should move expeditiously.
Okay.
Joe, under that third, we're still up, for everyone's reference, we're still up in strategy 1. We haven't moved, we've just kind of bounced, but let's move back to strategy 1. To Joe's point, the help fund infrastructure, we'll just weave in the 3P, the public-private partnership into that, because TRZ is already there, and we'll weave that private component into that one. Is it? Yes, sir.
Since I represent school district in Davis County, can I hear some philosophy regarding access to educational opportunities, what that may mean? Because we certainly build schools, and we certainly buy land for future needs to build schools on, but I just want to hear some of the philosophy of what that may look like. What does that entail? It talks about enhancing households' access to educational opportunities.
So we use access to opportunity as a metric for how any one person, regardless of like socioeconomic stratus or whatever across the region, the number of opportunities that they can access. So, and their ability to grow the number of opportunities they can access. For instance, I grew up in Davis County, went to the University of Utah at a time when it was only the 470 bus, and now you have trains connecting to trains connecting to the airport, and so our increased transportation investment has increased the number of people who have access equally or, you know, more equally across the region to a number of jobs, education, you know, other opportunities. So that's what that gets to. So it's not necessarily like K through 12. I would say it's probably post high school education, but in some of those other areas where transit access is good, it might allow like a 9th grader through 12th grader access to different schools or a broader area of the school district through transit accessibility or other.
Or even safe access to a school through crosswalks, sidewalks,
and there's type of thing. And there's a lot of elements to access to educational opportunity generally. How much does school cost? I mean, this is more about the physical environment. And if you want to get more training and more education, how many educational opportunities, be it university or two-year college or community college or vocational education, can you physically access from where you live? What are those connection points? Does it take you an hour and a half to get to the vocational school that is right for you? Or is there a good linkage, easy with driving or with transit, that you can connect people? Like, I'll just give you an example. There's folks that go to Weber State University from all over the region, right, Guy? And by building the Ogden Weber State bus rapid transit system, that'll connect the Front Runner station in with downtown Ogden with Weber State University. So that actually is going to provide easier and cheaper access to folks to take transit from all over the region to get to Weber State University if that's what's best for them. So that's what this notion is getting at, is the physical ability for people to get to the educational opportunities that are right for them, which in of itself is a good strategy for workforce and economic development.
Appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Yes. A comment, So I don't know if it's in number one or number two, but how do we address like access to electric vehicles or alternate transportation other than, I don't know how important evaluation criteria was in your thing. It says cars and auto.
It should have been transit. Lenise found that and texted me during, so thank you, Lenise. But so the performance evaluation should be workforce accessibility to job sites by car and transit in both of those. And part of the performance and evaluation, there are a lot of things that we would like to measure, I think, but some of this boiled down to what we physically can measure or that we can measure annually or without going to great expense. So workforce accessibility by car and transit is something that we can show you today as well as in future environments of built infrastructure over time. So we can
What about green transportation methods like cycling, e-vehicles, e-scooters? Is there a percentage that we can measure of that today that we can ideally grow?
Yeah, we can.
Okay, let's move on to strategy number two, create fiscally sustainable places. The longer version of that is revenues and expenses are balanced and sustainable for households, communities, and the region. I'm gonna give you a minute and a half to read the five strategies and collaborative actions. Okay. Thoughts on strategy number two, create fiscally sustainable places. Why don't we start with someone from the private sector? Any ideas? Absolutely, Carrie. That's wonderful.
So back to the real estate conversation and talking. Just as a background, what resources did this group provide so that Ogden City and Weber State and the hospital all collaborated and decided that $90 million rapid bus route is financially feasible, sustainable, economically, infrastructure development? Could you just give me an idea of what your strategy was, if it was a strategy 5 years ago whenever they started talking about it?
Do you want me to do that briefly?
Please.
Sure, I'm happy to. So I'm going to describe in a nutshell everything that we do here. The role that WFRC as an organization, of which the Economic Development District is part of, is we bring stakeholders together from across principally local governments of city, county, work with the state legislature and our federal, our congressional delegation, and then also with transportation agencies, UDOT, UTA, and then other stakeholders to look at what is the growth that is coming, anticipated to come in our region, where are households going to be located, new homes, where are new jobs going to be, and how are people going to have to get around, and then figure out what are the most effective transportation investments to meet those needs. Also recognizing that where we build transportation is not just going to respond to growth in homes and jobs, but it's also going to shape where those homes and jobs go. But we also know that money is not unlimited, so we have to be really prudent about what are the best kind of investments to be made. And in some cases, building, you know, in this case for transit, in some cases building a rail line is going to be the best because it's going to be a lot of usage and a lot of demand. But in other cases, you can't justify that expense, so you look for less expensive options. Here, for the project that you're talking about, the Ogden-Weber State Bus Rapid Transit, it didn't make sense to build a rail line there. Too expensive to match the nature of that community, but there was enough demand from connecting to Front Runner, the whole Front Runner system for the region, downtown Ogden, which is a thriving area, and then connecting through the community and to Weber State University, which is growing and already doesn't have enough parking and is trying to give access to their students, not just for that area, for the whole region. That was more need than just a regular local bus service. And so through a lot of analysis, and this started, you know, probably, gosh, I don't know, a decade, 15 years ago maybe it was first conceived, that coming up with a bus rapid transit system, which is like tracks on rubber tires, less expensive, but has more capacity and more guarantee that it's going to be there in the future than just a bus system. Through a lot of work and a lot of collaboration with partners, we all determined that
a lot of data, we determined
that's the right investment. But it's not just about transportation, it's also what's the land use that's going to occur around that. So all of that stuff goes into the determination, this is the best path forward. And now the funding is coming together from a whole variety of sources, right, Commissioner, to actually fund that project going forward.
Correct.
So was that either too long of an answer or
no,
I didn't answer your question?
You missed a step.
Okay, go ahead.
How it gets prioritized, where it gets prioritized, and then who determines who funds it.
Okay.
So it gets
prioritized first in the transportation plans that are developed here at the Wasatch Front Regional Council. That's the first step as the regional planning organization working with all of those stakeholders. Once it's in the plan, that means we know this is needed, but then how soon can it happen? When is the demand there? Is it now? Is it 10 years, 20 years, 30 years from now? And then also, when are there resources available? Once it's in the plan and we all determine that it's needed, then you go to the next step of trying to identify the resources for it. And that's something that is a real collaborative effort. WFRC has actually put some money into that project. So has UTA, so has Weber County, so has Ogden, so has the Weber Council of Governments. And now so has the federal government. They're moving towards putting a significant investment into that project. So that's, yeah, it's looking good. It's looking very good. So that's a collaborative effort. That's, by the way, that basic process that I just described is the way that all major transportation investments happen in our entire state. It doesn't happen, none of it happens overnight. It takes a lot of thoughtful collaboration and planning and bringing stakeholders together and working and working and working for those investments to happen.
I just wanted to note that the Economic Development District, this body, is a group that we actively seek comments on the regional transportation plan. And part of that is because we're not simply trying to solve transportation issues, we're trying to help the economy thrive, and this is the expert body, so I just wanted to note that proposition.
So the stakeholders reached out to you 10 years ago, and you're really the glue that gets them all together and has the resources, would that be?
I like that description.
Okay.
You're the glue.
And right now, so that Ogden, Weber State bus rapid transit line that we're now, everybody's just trying to get all the funding in place to make that happen, that started a long time ago. And right now, we're continuing to work on, we've heard reference here to Wasatch Choice 2050. What's the plan for now and the next 10, 20, and 30 years looking ahead to the future? And what are those investments that should happen? That's why, like Abby just noted on here, on the objectives, the second one, promote Wasatch Choice 2050. That's not just where we should be then, but what do we need to do now to get there as a coordinated growth, quality of life, and economic development strategy. So it's a continual process, particularly because we're growing so fast as a region.
Thank you.
Michael.
Just on, since the merit of this is that this is sustainable places, I just noticed, so one, on the first one, it talks about Utah State Sure Sites. I think, I don't know if somebody from the UC Utah State, hey, wow. I don't know if mega sites are considered the same as sure sites, but I think it would be noteworthy to include mega sites in that first line.
Okay, that's a great place for and sure sites.
Alan's got the term of our community ready strategies.
Yes.
That's like their key pillar.
Yep.
And then on the second one, just in that second column, just the like more of a 360 language there in terms of benefits and costs, right? Development brings with benefits and costs. So the way it reads to me now, it's more leaning towards what's the negative impacts necessarily, not necessarily what's the comprehensive impact.
Thank you.
But and then just building off that point, you know, in some of the older models of when we actually take this and put it into models and see it work, you know, the cost of a rooftop and the way we look at that in a revenue impact, in older models would look at a rooftop as a cost, like it's 80 cents on the dollar or something like that, versus hey, those people spend money in those communities. It's not a holistic impact. And I just think we go through this exercise, we have new tools, more data, more of this regionally is great kind of mentality. Let's be honest about that conversation, both that there are direct impacts, that sometimes certain developments have more cost than others, but on the other side, sometimes they have ancillary benefits or indirect benefits that we can capture far better now than we've ever been able to.
That's great.
Good ads.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Anyone else on the strategy? Muriel, sorry, you're on in my blind spot.
Perfect.
We've been speaking to the projected ridership for the Ogden-Weber State bus rapid transit line, but we actually have some concrete data already in Utah County with the Utah Valley Express line, which is also a BRT, where UTA is seeing increased ridership, not only, of course, on the line that's newly opened, but on every step on Front Runner along the way, right? Because it provides that regional access to educational opportunities, And through a collaborative partnership, you asked Carrie, right, like how does this stuff happen? So through a collaborative partnership with BYU and UVU, they were able to offer free passes for staff, faculty, and students at both of those universities. And then through WFRC's sister in Utah County, the Mountain Lands Association of Governments, they were able to get a federal grant to provide 3 years of free fares on that line. And they reached 4 months after partially opening a 1 million rider. So it's interesting to see kind of, and then, the economic development that's starting to really happen along that significant business corridor for the local cities. It's a win-win. I would say a couple comments for strategy number two.
Okay.
To consider. The first one, I don't know if it would fit more in strategy number two or strategy number four, and that is considering disruptive transportation technologies like connected autonomous vehicles. Right, if we're really talking about creating fiscally sustainable places, how does that fit in? It's something that historically we haven't had to even consider in our long-range transportation planning, but it's becoming more and more a reality. Just next month, UDOT and UTA, knock on wood that it all fits together, will be launching their autonomous shuttle demonstration at key strategic locations across the state. So that's here, right? And so how are we thinking about that when it comes to fiscal sustainability? I would love to repurpose my three-car garage for, a higher and better use. And that has direct impacts to my family budget, right? And then on the municipal scale and mm-hmm. The other one is TDM strategies, so travel demand management strategies, like UDOT's TravelWise program. So how are we not only, you say reduce travel demand, so you do have that here, but that a specific action for that would be, again, like partnering with existing programs like TravelWise.
Okay. Great, Matt.
Along the lines of autonomous vehicles and thinking forward with maybe future growth in that area, 5G systems is going to be very important.
Critical.
And the communities that are putting in 5Gs now are attracting the companies that are developing these autonomous vehicles. So the first people to put 5G in is going to win a lot of the AI space.
Yep.
Because you need the 5G network to test and to develop. So that's a huge capital infrastructure.
We actually have a state mandate to do small cell technology.
Can we accelerate that in certain areas? That's an idea.
Potentially, yeah.
My next question is on providing assistance to local governments. How tacit is that? So if you're in Roy and you have a small community, and then how can we help them do better land use planning in their area?
So Roy is an excellent example of this.
That's
because
that is the example.
Yeah. So our organization, unique to us in the state, and sort of unique across the nation, there are a number of them, but not in every MPO, has a local resource planning program that's called Transportation Land Use Connection. So we help put transportation, out of our transportation dollars, we prioritize planning, we go through a competitive process in the local communities, ask us to help them do regional and coordinated planning. So Roy, we've done a downtown plan as well as a transit kind of access plan, and Megan Townsend in the audience is our program manager for TLC, that TLC program. So we have that. We want to continue to encourage the utilization of that, and then we're attempting to tie results of our TLC program to our actual funding that we get, so our federal transportation dollars and the way that we administer those and implement them. So we want to see good planning, and then outcomes of the good planning are awards in transportation funding and infrastructure. So Mayor Dan Doy is a great partner, and Roy has been an excellent example of utilization of those programs.
Ted.
Really quick, the we of TLC is Wasatch Front, Salt Lake County, UDOT, UTA, so it's already a partnership.
Thank you.
I'm going to make an apology here. We use a ton of acronyms in this thing, and you guys, for the first meeting, that is our bad. So we will do better.
Yeah.
Next time,
there's people nodding around the table like, yes.
We will spell it out. Next time. So okay. This is.
Yeah, right. But then we have extra things to read.
I know. It's more letters. But the minute Guy said it, I was like, oh, it's right there, but no one knows what that means. So
yeah,
that's our bad. We will own that. And in the big document, just so you know, they will all be spelled out. And
Yeah, there are a lot of acronyms. There's a lot.
I wasn't even listening to you. I was just looking at all the
acronyms.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, any other comments on strategy number two? Because we do have
Abby,
to get through.
Joseph.
Yes.
So I'll be quick. As Andrew knows, you know, I'm a big believer, talked a number of times on the Hill about land use with our local political subdivisions. When we talk about affordability, though, I think that one thing we need to keep in mind is that a majority of our, or a large portion of our housing costs now relates to fees charged by our political subdivisions. In fact, Secretary Carson, when we were back in D.C., mentioned that's kind of taking place across the country. So we can talk about affordability and land use, which is a good subject to talk about, density, et cetera, but unless you include discussion on impact fees, housing costs, fees that go to local governments, whether that be county, state, or local, I think we're missing the boat. So I think in some cases it's as high as about 47-48% on cost in some areas and across the country. So I don't think, hopefully we're not there yet, but if we don't keep in mind these costs are continuing, these fees add to that overall cost of housing, we're never going to get there.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
So we need to, I think that fees need to be addressed, costs for local subdivisions, political subdivisions need to be included.
Okay, we'll absolutely add that in. Joseph, 30 seconds.
So just to follow up
Well, that's their story.
I've been on the side of the impact fee.
It's a tough balance.
Phasers, radar, sets, and so forth. When you think about 5G technology, So you get another layer of
water
attached, but now there's also additional technology in the roads, for example, that make the roads essentially by the
commercial building.
You can know the location of anything at any given time. And there are additional layers of technology that you can put on through to add safety. Again, I feel like I'm going to add the next tech advisory for
It's a balance, of course. I've
also got the time.
Okay. Strategy number three, provide amenities. Obviously, that's pretty narrow, broad. Let's move on to maintain quality of life elements that attract skilled labor by encouraging more walkable cities, open space preservation, and improved air and water quality. How about a minute and a half for those five strategies or objectives? Strategy, as Andrew just relayed to me, really is about what makes this region unique and what we all love about living in Utah. So let's talk about some things that we missed or enhancement to this strategy.
Sorry, I'm Diesel Lumber in Salt Lake City, but just talking about promoting tourism and then attracting skilled labor. So with our department, we go around, we have the dog. Tech talent, and employers, if we find that they're going to have a
that's great. Yes, ma'am.
I think we have to look at a specific line item or point around infill and the challenge, because it's just such a different thing for doing with infill to create some of these amenities. The active transportation piece, the walkability, the park, and then. So I don't know where that lands, but
it's strategy 2, number 1, objective. Is that? See it? Objective number 1, facilitate opportunities for centered growth and infill development.
So
are you thinking in this?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it links back the amenities that you're talking about. Many of them are kind of
how about under the collaborative actions under, I'm back on strategy 3, Mayor. Second bullet, maintain air quality, maybe support development and infill development. Right there? Urban and. You're talking amenities, so well, it doesn't really go there. I see it. I see what you're.
Amenities that make that community so small shops.
Yeah.
Different.
It's a different type of.
Yeah.
It's the 2019 to 2029 planning board. It's just a barrier in a different way.
It's not the greenfield.
Right.
One suggestion on that. I like that that comment. Right now, I know we're not supposed to get to the performance metrics too much, but right now we have this general, how much per capita. Well, we could look at how much near residents. And then you're asking the question, well, how do we do well if by providing amenities near people wherever they are? And then that naturally suggests, well, we have to remember built-out communities in addition to newly built communities. So that's maybe that partly is the notion there.
Yeah. It's just, I think, something
that is
very important and
I would. I just want to apply this and say broadly, we should really be. You can almost take two lenses through which you look at all of these strategies. Lens number one is areas that are not developed now and that are newly developing. And then the other is, what about areas that are already developed and are turning over and are being, or have infill and redevelopment? And they're
both.
And you have to do both of those things, and we have to, and maybe, Mayor, it's a really, and Scott, it's a helpful way for us as we go back through this to think about how these strategies and objectives apply in both of those settings, and be mindful about that, because you have a totally different approach in a greenfield area than you do in an infill and redevelopment area.
Any other thoughts on strategy number 3?
People not contribute to add anything.
Yes.
Not to make
specific actions for all the building standards and true energy efficiency. I'm really concerned about context. We just ended up talking about this.
Michael, will you move this over towards Chris, please? Thank you. Sorry, Chris. Start over.
On item number 2, supporting development and building standards and improve energy efficiency. I want to make sure we keep some context in mind there, too, that we don't, in fact, contradict something that we've supported in number 2, right, regarding affordability.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's definitely trade-offs between the two. I mean, if you reduce impact fees, then there's a trade-off there for local government's ability to pay their own bills versus household affordability. So the strategy 2, fiscally sustainable places, tries to aim at both state and local government fiscal sustainability as well as local fiscal sustainability with total household costs, automotive and housing. But then in number 3, it's that balance of trying to do the right thing and being, you know, good shepherds and moving forward.
I think that's where we run into possibly some semantic problem of doing the right thing to make 30 different things. Right?
This is true. Yeah.
Well, and just a comment, just a lot of the language, and I'm not complaining, but a lot of it is that top-down approach on what we want to influence cities to do. But at some point, these cities are also doing really good things.
Right.
And have a lot of the solutions that are going to meet halfway. And so a lot of these priorities, I think a lot of it's finding out where a community's already headed and their identity, right? So we talk about, we want walkable communities or like diversity, and then we see that city after city after city of saying the city is more geared towards
right.
this, which is a neighboring city, which is different, which is okay, because that's where you get your sense of place. Mm-hmm. And that's what cities really do, is we do a lot of effort to create a sense of community, not just efficient heads in beds and moving the pawns around. So yeah. It's...
No, Ty, that's great. And I think that can go... We talked about this a little bit on our call on Friday, but the overarching theme of this whole thing before we get into the rigmarole of the bullet points is each one of our communities needs to continue to have a uniqueness and its own identity. I mean, we certainly don't want to be the Stepford Wives, and we have
And that's why we're the regional group, is right? Because we don't want to try and compete, right?
Yep.
But we want to say, if we have an opportunity in this area, here's the perfect location where these factors come together, and that's where it exists. Right. You know, just from Morgan, it's sometimes we feel like we're disconnected because we're off geographically off the Wasatch Front, but we're not something for everyone. But we do play a piece in the regional perspective. Right. So just
you're
a lot
how
of
I get there.
Well,
right.
It's the corner of the community. You don't have to come to Morgan City. But anyway, just a lot of the language is provide cities with this, you know, basically teach cities how to do this, make better choices, but there's going to be a feedback, or should be a feedback at some point, because I think cities are doing some really good things that are probably going to be a lot of the solutions by the time, you know, a certain plan reaches that.
No one size fits all.
Yeah.
And I could do another hour on impact fees, but I won't.
Okay. Fair enough.
Let's not start that battle.
But the valid point is what are they being charged for and why, right? So in a little community like ours, you've only got so many people that need a sewer system. So how you pay for that is every budget structure is different, a magic number of what's driving costs and types of housing and that sort of thing. So it's really, I just don't want to overshoot the uniqueness.
The blanket approach, yeah.
Just, I mean, we need to because it's a regional viewpoint, right? But at the same time, I think there's some...
Okay.
That's
great.
An important
That's
point.
Good. I'm glad you spoke up. Yes, Michael.
On Chris's, we shouldn't have sat next together on this one. But on that one, if it, you know, said something about support development building standards that balance affordability and improve energy efficiency.
We actually wrote that.
So you have a trade-off in there.
That's a great.
We're cognizant of it. There's a huge push on the residential side in 2015 to update those codes.
There is
nothing. Us or many other people in the
commercial space, too.
Those are very aggressive codes. We're marketing to those codes, like we're proud of that energy efficiency.
Right.
That being said, there's cost, diminishing returns on cost on that side. That's why I think this year's bill on energy efficiency that addresses the commercial side and really focused on older building stock is really noteworthy. It kind of fits that germane language you have here.
Yeah, that's great.
We get the most ROI at this point, especially on older building stocks catching up on dollars spent. So like CMAQ dollars, that's interesting. So we do CMAQ dollars to revolving loan fund around energy efficiency to improve air quality, which unlocks headroom inside of our quotas so we can actually go chase another manufacturing facility.
Right.
I mean, it all works together, and so I'm sensitive
that's
to
great.
Both sides of the coin there. But to Chris's point, semantics will become very painful after that germane statement. Just having some kind of trade-off or balance statement in there.
We had written it down, so thank you for that.
Good. That's helpful.
Andrew, anything here from you?
You said it first.
the energy efficiency piece. The energy efficiency I had note on. I don't know if you want to jump into some of the performance metrics there and the evaluation piece. As someone that direct jobs fluctuate quite a bit in hospitality for us, I mean, the seasonal nature in our world, again, semantics here, as a metric, I would caution us that way.
Okay. And if anything in the way that we look at this, it would be the objectives and collaborative actions, there will be more of them, and the performance and evaluation, we can actually shrink that section down. I mean, it's more things to report on. So this, in some ways, was a laundry list of metrics and items that we thought that we could get, or as I've looked at other comprehensive strategies across the nation. And then Ben Becker with Science Public Finance has been helping us drive that down. So I'll make a note that one might not be a real...
So a lot of these come from existing organizations that you don't even have to chase, like Visit Utah can give you that metric. The Pathways organizations can give you how they measure things. So you just reach out to them, and that would be beneficial in a lot of ways to use their data.
Right.
Yeah, we don't want to reinvent the wheel. No. We want to take advantage of things that exist already. But if we can coordinate activities together and achieve better outcomes, then we try to do that.
Also, just for Chris and Michael, I hope that this is helpful for everybody, but the role of this committee isn't to develop this thing. It's not to have the perfect SEDS that we all hold on high and we wave around and we have a document. It's really to have these conversations. So the value, we want the perfect SEDS and the conversation, but I think that that's really helpful, but I wouldn't look at any of these as gospel. What it's really looking at are what we can do. So I think it's really helpful to have that, but don't let the one line item in here be a reason to have a lot of heartburn about what we're chasing for.
I hope neither of us heartburn, per se.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I want to challenge each one of us because we all come from a different area and a different perspective and a different goal in mind being here. What on this list can you impact? Can your business, can your county, can your city, what can you do? There might be a multitude of things, but what can you do and start implementing? You don't have to do all of them. This is not a one size fits all, but what can you do to start moving the needle on these things? And that's when we'll have change. That's when we'll have the impact. What can Mayor Wilson do within her newly formed economic development group? What can you start to incorporate that moves the needle in your area, which essentially moves the needle in the region?
Well, I hesitate to bring it up because I think it might be a little too far-reaching and esoteric, but as I'm listening to a lot of these comments, and I agree, and I love what Ty brought up in regards to you're welcome, the impact fees and everything else, because some of my constituents may say, well, why as a current resident of the county should my taxes incrementally go up to afford niceties that only attracts other folks in and forego impact fees? And I wouldn't say that they're wrong. So I have, you know, my foot on one side of the fence there, but on the other hand, I'm very sympathetic to the affordable housing situation, growing up with a single mom that moved around a lot, incrementally going to a safer neighborhood, from rental situations, an apartment to a home, to being able to buy the first home. I think I've got my foot on the other side there. Listening to a podcast that I did this weekend about affordable housing, you know, whether it's this situation about impact fees, or as I'm considering building standards that improve energy efficiency and understanding the diminishing rate of returns that Michael brought up. You know, over time though, those who are the most vulnerable to be able to afford the house in the first place may not be able to stay in the house over maintenance costs, right? So energy efficiency becomes a situation that some folks demographically may be too short-sighted to think about those costs over time. And one of the examples that this podcast I was listening to over the weekend mentioned is even those who are the most vulnerable to be able to get into affordable housing, let's say a storm comes through and a large tree branch falls on their home and has damage to the property, their insurance may cover that. But if it falls in the middle of the yard, there's no insurance for that. And so that fallen branch from a big tree may just sit there for a long period of time and become that broken window syndrome. And so, again, I get that this is a bit out of scope of this, but for me, I'm thinking of financial literacy. So knowing that Cary represents a bank, and you asked, Madam Chairwoman, what can we do in our community to make a difference? Financial literacy is a problem. A lot of folks don't understand the long-term gain, whether it's about impact fees or whether it's, is the home affordable right now, but what happens over time with maintenance costs, and can they still continue that mortgage payment as taxes increase over time? And then 10 years in, there's certain maintenance costs, and 20 years in, there's certain extra maintenance costs, like a roof, that they can't do on top of the affordable housing mortgage. You know, I don't know if that
can
gets
I
too,
add one layer yeah, to your yeah. transportation costs for them to incur? How do they get to access to opportunity to jobs?
I was going to bring that do up they, if I kept ranting, so I love that. Thank you.
Do they have access to upskill?
Go to where you can afford to meet it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're the one who keeps bringing that up inside Tooele County, but I've become
But you
a,
do not take, most you people don't that. Take into consideration their transportation costs when they're yeah. buying a home.
And what happens if your car depreciates quicker than your car payment goes away? You know what I mean? Yeah. And there's a major problem. So it's a lack of financial literacy, and I didn't get that growing up. I didn't have that firsthand experience. I learned a lot of those lessons the hard way, and I'm grateful for the higher education that taught me some of those things through business courses, because my family dynamic didn't teach me those. They didn't set me up for that kind of yeah. perspective. And so I'm grateful I was able to learn some of those things the hard way and recover, because I didn't necessarily have those. So anyway, I get that that's probably out of the scope of this, but as I think about economic development, I go to the book, The Richest Man in Babylon, if you're familiar with it, and how communities, and then it extrapolates inversely down to households. Those that understand savings and long-term costs are the most financially secure and able to benefit themselves. I've seen a lot of links there, so I'm going to just put that down.
Oh, that's great.
No, thanks for that. Any other comments on number three? We're going to pop down to number four. We've got like 5-6 minutes. Okay, attract and retain businesses and encourage innovation. Support and encourage business retention, job creation, workforce development, and innovation by partnering and information sharing. How about a minute here?
Yeah. So, and just a note on this one in particular, if you were familiar with the previous six goals and then there were three strategies, the way the old SEDS was organized, this is I don't want to call it a catch-all, but it's kind of a catch-all for efforts that are outside of Wasatch Front Economic Development District. So this picks up what local governments are doing. We don't own any infrastructure. We don't own any sites. We're not contacting businesses to bring them in. We would be a partnership entity in all of those efforts. And so I think that the top three or more work that we would continue to do hands-on, day-to-day work on as an EDD, and these are more our collaborative efforts and how we might bring in partnerships for us all to understand them more.
So it's recognizing other things happening with other entities in the lead, EDCU, GOED, et cetera, county economic development around the region?
Yep.
Okay.
And this was something that was asked of us when we initially submitted to our Denver office that asked us to add this piece in. So that's why you didn't see it last time we met.
I like it, just because I'd be remiss as the Deseret UAS representative on the strategy committee if I didn't bring up what our entity is doing in facilitating economic development through the advancement of a nascent but fast-growing industry, and trying to encourage companies in this industry to locate in these rural counties and bring with them hundreds of jobs, right? That's the idea, and that's through the advancement of drone technologies that have gotten to the point where they can carry people in packages. So how is it that we can facilitate those types of industries where we would like to have them here at home? They bring high-paying jobs. And then just the coordination with other regional efforts like the Inland Port. We as a state can offer not only highways and rail, but vertical infrastructure that supports transportation aerially, then that's I think, also something to consider. And it's very much about encouraging innovation through supporting the growth of key industry clusters.
Great. Yes? Karen, will you move the mic just to her a little bit, please? Thank you.
I think one of the things that we maybe can add to that, I mean, GOED and EDC Utah, local partners, but I think we also maybe want to talk about our small business development centers and our business resource centers, because those are critical to that. And connecting them with financial institutions and having that be a piece of that, I think.
Great. Please elaborate.
In all seriousness, like Catalyst Project, so Point of the Mountain is the Catalyst Project. Yeah. It's not listed here.
Okay.
I mean, there was some of that stuff throughout, but you know, the two counties, Weber and Davis, looking at a regional EDO as a Catalyst Project. The Inland Port very specifically called out, and you make the nexus with kind of global trade, but the Inland Port actually is a Catalyst Project outside of trade.
Yeah.
Like, as a
right.
And so it says, I don't know the distinction, Scott, but it's those upper echelon job center.
Right. Generational.
Yeah. Generational opportunities, Catalyst opportunities. I don't know.
I think that's a good way to put it.
You need almost a catch-all for those, because more often than not, those are the ones that are going to be coming here for a level of recommendation to EDA and saying, hey, we want to do this industry cluster analysis at Point of the Mountain on technology, and we want EDA dollars on it. If it's in the SEDS, we all know it helps them get the dollars. So the SEDS should be, to your point, as open-ended and as inclusive as we can make it, while still being target-specific and direct.
Yeah.
But I just think you missed.
That's a great one.
The big ones.
It's good. He gave you two a shout out.
Another one could be increase. If I think there's already regulations on how much entities have to purchase from small and minority and locally owned businesses. If those could, if they're not in place, be put in place, and those that are there have some desire to increase their purchasing of small, minority, or locally owned businesses. And in some cases, that's really difficult because there may not be suppliers for certain things. But that's the opportunity to create growth by creating a supplier with a purchase order.
Yes. I think we're going to have everyone comment by the end of this. And if you haven't commented, I'm going to call on you. So just be prepared. Karen, you're up next. Go ahead, Mike.
I'm just looking at this business expansion retention, and I'm thinking about you know, how as government entities we can play a part in that. And I think one big part of that is in our permitting and our processes. And what I mean by that is, if I'm a business owner and I come and I want to establish a business in a community, and I go into the municipality and I find out it's going to take me months upon months to get my permits and I, you know, get through their bureaucratic process, for lack of a better word, I may choose to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because it's just too cumbersome to deal with, and I would rather, even if it costs me more money, I would rather go to another community to do it because I can do it quicker. So I think we need to look at those processes and say, can we streamline them, can we make them more efficient so that when a business is ready to expand, whether it be in an existing facility or build a new facility, they can do that without going through a really long process.
Yeah, that's
you know, Abby, can I just make a comment
on that?
You know, that's one of the things that, that we saw in Layton City going back, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago. And we worked very hard on trying to basically take this process that seemed to go on forever and condense it down. And so when we were working with RC Willie, which actually they are right now, I got to take the word out of it, they are right now. One of the things when we went down to their Sacramento opening, their grand opening down there, and they can't, what they tell us, it took them a year to get stuff through Sacramento down there. I'm trying to remember the process they had to go through battle it was. Yeah. So when they came into Layton City with their initial plans, they said, we're trying to lay this out, we need to understand how many months this is going to be. We said, we think we can have you up and ready to go in 6 weeks. And
they just looked at us like, are you kidding me? And I totally agree with you with what you're saying, is that all of us have got to figure out how we can make this process as tight as possible and as easy as possible. Of course, Gage says we take out as much money from what we do, and I say, no, we get as much as we can. But anyway, that is a very good point with what needs to happen on that. So,
thanks, Commissioner. Alan, anything from you on any thoughts, ideas?
No, I'm just happy to be part of the process.
Okay.
Just to say along those lines, I think that any help on policy making that deals with the disruptive technologies and those sort of things, so I think economy-wise, it's going to way outpace the normal the what we have on the books, and that, like, we don't know.
Yeah,
it's very variable.
So, you know, the scooters and the all of those type of things, I think that's where one area that maybe a group like this could find who's doing that on leading edge, or offer resources that way. That
That's great.
I mean, we're not going to know until it hits us, but I feel like we're always a couple of, you know, Morgan hasn't even started the problems that you guys had 10 years ago, so.
Right.
So that's a good point.
You will, though, with this growth.
They'll catch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but.
Karen, I'm going to give you a softball. Anything you want to add to any of these areas, not just on number four.
Well, when he brought up not knowing what's coming in the future, just what I see with my business, the new hemp being legal, being declassified as a Schedule 1 by the federal government, and now it can be grown in agriculture. So some of the Davis County open fields can swap from hay to hemp, and having more city regulations up to speed with that, because Morgan County is going to get a farm. You know, there's other counties that are not in this group, but we've got a lot of open land that can be turned into that and be a big income and a big employer, because it's very labor intensive.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay. Susie, anything from you?
I don't have much of a voice today, so I haven't said much, but overall I think it's really great. I just caution all the fiscally sustainable communities, as it's very hard to measure one area if you do too small an area. One area supports another part of the community.
All the states?
So I think we have good general guidelines in place. We can measure some of that. I don't know if we can get that. We want to try to tie that down to small areas. Impact fees, just a caution on those. If you decide to waive impact fees, you may think you're making housing more affordable. But what's going to happen is on your water rates, then you're going to have to put that water rate right up there to cover those capital costs. And all of those people who just bought those less affordable homes, or affordable homes, are going to have to pay higher water rates or higher sewer rates or whatever. So just look at both sides of the plan on that one. And then just this one, the TRZs up here, and the first one is how we share the CDA and RDA. We just want to call them CRAs now instead of CDAs.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
And finally, just an emphasis on high-paying jobs as well as
those are great comments. Thank you. Mauricio, we didn't even get you to introduce yourself, so if you do that and then give us any of your thoughts.
The business in Morgan County.
Which one?
I traverse towards the travel. It wasn't going right in
the I got to help out on the community.
I've enjoyed what I've listened to. It's been all about strategy on the field.
Perfect. Thank you. Mayor?
What I've learned from all of this is that we're a little farther off the Wasatch Front, but we can learn. We can learn from what's happening over here. We can, and I really think all of this is a collaborative effort, that we can't be territorial, that we can't be saying, hey, I'm just looking out for me. We have to work together to make all of this happen, and like I say, not just for our area, but throughout the state. So thank you. This is an awesome project, and you've done a lot of work, and I appreciate all that.
So we are well over, but I do just want to ask, because this is tied back to EDA funding, and I think that Michael, you brought that up and you made that really clear. Is there anything that you would want to do at a local government that, well, and maybe I'll ask this by email, it's a long question, but think about things that you would be applying to EDA for. So infrastructure investment, innovation centers, new job sites, the infrastructure as it relates to new job sites, and is it on this list? Because this, you need to have local project reflected in the SEDS as applied up through EDA. So that's why we try to make it as comprehensive as possible. So think about that, and if you think of something, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night and think, oh, we want this, and it's not on your list, then please email me. Otherwise, we hope that we're reflecting what you think you would be applying for to receive EDA funding and how we could help facilitate getting EDA dollars down into our region.
We're gonna take two more minutes at the discretion of me. We're gonna ask you two ladies. Any final comments, Mayor?
I don't know if, when we were talking about the green aspects and environmentally sound, I sense a little bit of heartburn, just making sure it pencils out financially. This might date me, but triple bottom line, anybody hear of that concept? Meaning that it has to be social, environmental, and financial goals. And so that kind of makes it so that you don't skew so far one way or another that you're trashing your investment or you're not making environmentally disastrous decisions. So it might be something to look at to implement triple bottom line. If that's something that meets the goals,
yeah. Making sure you're balancing out those various interests. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So just making sure that we're not ruining people's opportunities to make a living in order to make sure they're green or live in a neighborhood.
Not to choose.
Yeah. So just make sure it all pencils out.
Perfect. Linda, from the retail perspective?
Yeah, the only other thing I can think about, I mean, we haven't really addressed what's going to happen at Hill Air Force Base. 5,000 new employees coming up, 20% increase in the total workforce at Hill. Those are going to be, it's a big impact. But the final thing that I always wonder about is, where are we getting water? Have we really considered the impact of all of this growth and the water that we need for the growth? So, I just don't know how that ties in, but I just want to bring those two things up.
You know, on both of your points, which are great ones, the comprehensive economic development strategy is a piece of the broader, what we call Wasatch Choice vision for the region,
right,
which is growth, land use, transportation, economic development, air quality, water, how all of these pieces fit together. But I think your point illustrates perfectly, how is growth going to occur that is related to economic development, but how does it tie in with all of those other pieces? So it's really pulling them together, weaving them together, that we're trying to do here. So those are great points. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, we are going to wrap this up. Know about the open house on Thursday from 4 to 6. The Golden Spoke Bicycle Ride, this is second annual?
Yes.
Second annual, May 11th, at the route to be determined. And Katie should have sent the invites for this next meeting, but it's May 20th from 1:30 to 3 right here. Anything else I'm missing?
You're gonna do updates to this following this conversation and then send it back around, and we welcome any further input leading into the May meeting when we're doing adoption of the SEDS. Is that right, Scott?
That's right.
And okay. In May, there will be a test on the acronyms. Just to start there.
Yeah, I apologize.
Okay, motion to adjourn.
By Commissioner Milne.
Do I have a second?
For adjournment.
Second. Everyone. We're adjourned.
Right. Did we have